Mike Vrabel is at the podium now, so we'll take it over to St. Thomas Sportsplex.
Really in awe of the players on both sides, Buffalo and Cincinnati. The way that they supported each other was amazing to see. We all watch these games differently. You know, fans watch them at home or a bar, or, you know, coaches in this league watch them, you know, as they're working and the game's on in the background. So, you know, we were all affected, you know, differently. But, you know, we just send our condolences and really just the respect that we have for everybody involved and wish nothing but the best for DeMar.
Mike, with that, has there been any discussions about whether or not to play this weekend, considering he's still in critical condition?
No discussions. That would be a league thing. You know, we're doing our best to prepare for the amazing opportunity that we have and for our football team.
You mentioned the human element as coaches. I'm presuming maybe in the building last night, was it a moment that you turn, you watch? How struck were you by that? I mean, you've been a player, you've seen players taken off, teammates taken off. How difficult was it maybe to see that start happening? And was it must see TV at that moment?
Well, I think the one thing that resonates now is, you know, when you're a parent. And your kids play sports. With all respect to the other players, you don't really watch them. You don't watch the game. You stare at your son or your daughter, you know, who's an offensive lineman or a third baseman, and you don't know if it was a ball or a strike, and you don't know if it was a run play or a pass play. You just kind of watch your son or daughter, and that's kind of how you watch sports as a parent. So I guess that's what I thought is. You know, that he has a grandparents or parents, you know, that watch that. And, you know, they didn't know how T. Higgins got the ball. They just saw him make a tackle. They watched him, you know, progress through the play. So I guess that's where I went. And then, you know, just watched everything unfold with the coaching staffs and, you know, the players, how they supported each other.
Mike, what's been the mood around the team this morning?
We shared, some great conversations. Had an opportunity to, discuss this, how everybody's feeling. I think guys are, you know, they understand, the severity, you know, of this. They understand the game and what we love, and sometimes things that you love the most and that can give you the most can also take the most away. But, you know, there were some really, really cool comments that our players shared with each other and with me and everybody else. So I think that they are doing their best to support former teammates who are in Buffalo, but also understand that, you know, we have a great opportunity to continue to do what we love to do. And one of our leaders said, you know, and this is someone that knew DeMar, or knows DeMar, is that they're grateful. They're reminded that they're grateful that they get to do this. And I thought that was really special to hear some of those guys talk.
Mike, do you think the conversation will be ongoing within your locker room and with your team this week as you move forward? Or is this one of those things where you kind of have to put it to bed this morning and try to focus the best you can on your job?
Well, I don't think that those discussions ever really stop. I mean, I think we all, you know, have to at least appreciate, you know, what we do, where we do it and who we get to do it, you know, with, you know, and just understand the, you know, the things that go along with playing football and being a teammate and everything else. And so, you know, that those conversations with injuries may come up or, you know, in this case, something, you know, much, much worse. So I don't want it to, like, necessarily have to go anywhere. I want it to be, you know, part of, you know, the conversation if that's where the players feel like, you know, they want it to go, or, you know, how we all deal with things, and we're going to feel, each person's going to feel, you know, maybe a little differently.
Shifting gears, Mike. Mm-hmm. For Josh to take over a huddle in such short order, the leadership qualities that come and some of the things you tend to rely on with the quarterback developing over time. How difficult is it to ask a guy, and what can you expect out of a guy in short order as compared to what you get out of a guy that puts a whole off season into it?
Well, I mean, quarterbacks have been quarterbacks since they probably grabbed a football. Then they're 6 years old and they started throwing a football, and they kind of have characteristics and qualities, and half the battle is acting like one. Is acting like a quarterback, and I think Josh is going to be very well prepared, and understand that we'll have to go in on a great environment on Saturday night, and we'll start that preparation today. But he understands that, and he's played quarterback, and he's played in front of big crowds, and he's played in big games.
How has he been just as far as adjusting to that role as a leader here, in this locker room so quickly?
Well, I think probably, from the get-go, I think he was probably just trying to focus on knowing what to do and the terminology. And then, I think we went to the Cowboys game, and there's some guys he probably didn't even know their first name. I think that'll probably change by the time Saturday comes.
You talked after the game, about getting some of your guys back. How much juice does it give you knowing you've got a game plan now that includes Simmons, Autry, Fulton, Hooker, and the rest that you're getting back?
Henry?
It's a big one.
I think that's just something that everybody felt after the game. I think that our players felt it. I felt like they played extremely hard. They prepared extremely hard. Came up a little short, obviously, the other night. And guys were back. I think they were energized. And this, it's such a difficult thing, when you want to try to send a message of, we talked yesterday about being excited and embracing the opportunity. And then life happens, last night. And but we still need to get there, and we still will be there. And I think we'll, go out and start our preparation today on the field.
The idea of playing mistake-free or close to it. You want guys to be cleaner, but how much do you need them not to, overthink that?
Yeah, we don't want to sit there and paralyze ourselves with being perfect. I think we have to try to be precise and not worry about being perfect. Nobody's going to be perfect out there on the football field. There's a lot of things that, keep you a bit, from ever being perfect. We don't want that. We want them to understand the concept of the play, the details that are associated with it, and the technique and fundamentals to do their job, and, communicate with urgency. And, a lot of those things you can make up. You make up for mistakes with, some other things, with effort and finish and communication, and playing, as a team, and letting somebody else, help you if you make a mistake. The guy next to you hopefully can fix it.
Do you have to have a different plan for Ingram, or do guys just have to execute better against him?
Well, we probably need to be tighter on him and be able to, keep our leverage, tackle. But he, it's not like they're going to not target him. He's had 36 targets in the last four games, had the one 2 days ago. So, he was, been a really good, productive player here down the stretch for him.
How big would it be to, go out there and score on that first drive on offense, something that you guys did a lot earlier this season? Like, how much would that kind of just shake off this funk, that the offense has had over the six-game streak?
Well, I don't think that anything that we've done prior to this is going to really matter in all three phases. The only thing that's going to matter is what we do on Saturday night. And if we score, great. We're going to need to go down and score again. I think we'll need more than seven to win. And if we don't score, we'll have to, come off and make some adjustments and keep swinging. And so, it'd be great to score, the first possession of the game, but it'd also be great to stay really consistent and take advantage of the opportunities and play complementary football and take care of the football.
No activation for long this week, Mike?
Not as of today, no.
You didn't have Autry the first time you guys played the Jags. Coincidentally, not so coincidentally, you didn't have any sacks on Trevor. How much can he help the pass rush?
The sacks are one thing. You should, we would have to focus on how we can disrupt the quarterback. Yeah, our ability to disrupt them and affect them. that wasn't good either. You know, not only were the sacks, you know, weren't there, but, you know, so we'll have to try to, you know, find different ways and make sure that, you know, he doesn't have 120 rating and, you know, because that'd be tough to overcome.
Is there anybody other than Long who could be in line for that last activation line?
I think we addressed this the other day. I don't think that there is. No, I don't think at this time.
How's the patched up offensive line done over the last couple of games? Have you seen improvements?
I mean, there were some good things. There were some times where, you know, on Thursday, Josh had some time to progress through. And then other times where, you know, needs to be better. And again, that's, you know, it's going to be another good front this week. It's all about the Jacksonville Jaguars and how we, you know, can block, you know, Allen and Key, Walker, you know, Harris inside and everything that they do and Hamilton. The pressures they bring, the safety pressures, or, you know, blitzing a backer. So that's what it's going to be about, and, you know, hopefully we'll be able to, you know, start that preparation here today.
Does having a six-year guy like Dobbs as the quarterback, does that allow you to kind of open things up a little bit more, call the game differently as opposed to a rookie like Malik?
I mean, I think you go in with a game plan and you see kind of how, how it's working and what he feels comfortable with against some of the stuff that they're doing. You know, I don't know if that's, you know, the game plan is going to be the same for both quarterbacks.
Do you feel with the way that he's able to progress through, like, does that keep the offense on schedule a little bit more?
Running good plays and executing good plays keeps us on schedule, not having unforced errors, you know, penalties that I think are avoidable. You know, some penalties are what they are, you know, but some of them are avoidable. That's what helps stay on schedule. And, you know, starts with the substitution, starts with the operation, the cadence, all those things that we're going to have to be great with on the road.
Like, what kind of things did you hear or information did you get about Dobbs before he came in, and what have you learned about him in his time here?
I think he's, you know, I mean, he's got a calming presence. You know, I mean, I think he's, you know, he's got a nice, confident calmness to him. You know, seemed like he came over on the sidelines, communicated well with the players, communicated well with Todd and Pat and Malik, you know, about what he saw. You know, I saw him communicate with the receivers afterwards, and, you know, he's an intelligent player. It's been really, you know, it's been nice having him around and working with him and getting to know him. I've really always admired him from afar, you know, his career and, you know, what he's done.
Anticipate this feeling like a road playoff game?
Yes. Yeah, this would be, you know, a road. I mean, I think this is a playoff. It's certainly a playoff game for us. You know, so that's how we'll treat it and, you know, make sure that we're doing all those things that, you know, that give you a chance to win, and make sure that we're working all the cadences and working the silent and the crowd noise and substitution, all those things that are going to be critical, you know, for us on offense and special teams. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
2017.
All right, there you go. That was Mike Vrabel at the podium recapping DeMar Hamlin, how their feelings have been inside the locker room, and also looking ahead to the Titans matchup with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Coming up next, we will react to what Mike Vrabel had to say, and we will chat with ESPN analyst Tim Hasselbeck in 15 minutes. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3, the game. We are live from the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. And, of course, we are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Tennessee Superbook is the number one sports book in Las Vegas. We just heard from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel, and I think the overwhelming message from Mike Vrabel, and he had a lot to say about the Titans organization and sending their thoughts and prayers out to DeMar Hamlin. on. And of course, we will keep everybody updated on what the Titans had to say and any updates that we have about DeMar Hamlin's condition. We will continue to keep you updated as soon as information becomes available. But other than that, I think the biggest message from Mike Vrabel is how they're going to have to play against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and more specifically, how they lost a few weeks ago to the Jags. It was turning the ball over. It was silly penalties. Mike Vrabel called it unforced mistakes, and I think that was the message today, is they can't make those silly mistakes. They can't turn the ball over. In a game like this, it's a must-win situation. You got to play mistake-free football.
Well, as mistake-free as you possibly can. You can't do things that are, you know, self-inflicted. You can't do, you know, pre-snap, post-snaps. Now, there's going to be holding calls. That's just the way – I mean, very seldom do you see a game that doesn't involve the holding call offensively or defensively. That's just the way the league is. You can call holding on every play if you wanted to, because there is holding every play in a sense. But he's talking about those things, you know, and Willie and I were talking about this off air. It's, I want you to go 100%, but you got to know where that line is. It's playing fast, physical, but under control. Mm-hmm. Under control is the key word. I can play fast and physical, but some people don't know how to play it in control. Some people just, they just know one way, just go straight through the wall. They don't know nothing else. But you got to be able to play fast, physical, but under control, knowing what you can do and what you can't do, knowing what circumstance you're in. Yes, I'm going to give it all I have, but I know on this particular play, there's things I just can't do as a player. I know the line. I know where it's at. I'm going to go to it, but I'm not going to cross it, because if I cross it, now I put my team in a situation where they're going to throw a flag, and now we've pushed ourselves back, or we've given them a first down at a critical time of the game where we didn't need to.
And if you're in a groove, you can do all that without even thinking about it.
Exactly.
But when you are in a locker room where your team has been, you don't have much margin for error, you're not the more talented team, you're missing a lot of key guys, you're thinking about it too much, right? And that's, I thought that was a really good question. And Mike Vrabel gave a great answer, too, of trying to find the balance as a coaching staff. You're stressing. Look, we don't have the horses here. We are the underdog. We've got to play mistake-free. But sometimes if you're thinking about it too much, you tend to you put the reins on people, and they feel a little too tentative. So you want to instill that confidence. You know, there's that balance that you strike psychologically. It's not easy to hit all the time. I felt like sometimes in the past, if I was just hammered in, don't turn the ball over, don't turn the ball over, I found myself thinking about it too much. If I wasn't confident, then you're almost tentative and you're more apt to turn it over in that kind of situation. So I think you want to instill confidence and belief that, hey, if we're focused, if we've got the right play call, if we're in the right place, we're not going to turn it over. We're going to play mistake-free football. But there's that balance, right? You have to be demanding, because you know if you don't get it, you're not going to win.
But it's all about preparation. If we prepare the way we're supposed to prepare, we have these situations within practice, whether it's third down, 2 minutes, short yardage, goal line, you know, what do they call it? Fire, where, you know, the kicking team comes out with like 10 seconds left and everybody got to rush, and it just looks like chaos, but it's really not chaos because we've practiced it so much. When you're in a situation like that, that's why you see some teams or some guys and you think like, man, this guy's just, or girl is just so cool and calm, like under this moment. Why? Because they practiced this moment forever. Teams that seem like, you know, in the last 2 minutes, we look at these great quarterbacks and these great offenses and we think, man, it seems like they have no concept of time. They're just doing what they do. Why? Because they practice this. They don't let the moment get bigger than what it should be. If I practice big moments, then when we get in big moments, I will operate as such. I won't get too high, I won't get too low. That's what he wants this team to do. Listen, we've practiced situations like this. So if we go into a game knowing that we got to win it last drive, we should be okay. Why? Because we went over this for 18 weeks. Situations where we're on our own 20 with a minute left and we got to kick a field goal or we got to score a touchdown. We rehearse this over and over and over again. So why should it be now difficult for us? You know, you see it whether you're going to see a play, you know, whether it's another basketball game, football game, anything. If you sit down and you really watch them and you think like, man, how are they doing this? Like, Why does it seem like it's a piece of cake? Well, because they've practiced this moment forever.
For yeah.
They're prepared for it. So the Titans need to be prepared for it.
And Mike Vrabel was asked about how that difficult balance between preparation and making sure you're playing clean football, but also sitting back and trusting what you were coached. This was Mike Vrabel at the podium.
The idea of playing mistake-free or close to it, you want guys to be cleaner, but how much do you need them not to like overthink that?
Yeah, we don't want to sit there and paralyze ourselves with being perfect. You know, I think we have to try to be precise and not worry about being perfect. Nobody's going to be perfect out there on the football field. There's a lot of things that, keep you a bit, from ever being perfect. We don't want that. We want them to understand the concept of the play, the details that are associated with it, the technique and fundamentals to do their job and, communicate with urgency. And, a lot of those things you can make up. You make up for mistakes with, some other things, with effort and finish and communication, and playing, as a team and letting somebody else, help you if you make a mistake. The guy next to you hopefully can fix it.
And I think that's the advantage of, not overthinking it and not beating yourself up over not being perfect. I think there you see the value in having Josh Dobbs starting over a rookie in Malik Willis. That Josh Dobbs, albeit he doesn't have in-game experience, he's been in the league for 6 years. Mm-hmm. He was a starting quarterback at Tennessee. He understands that, if you throw an interception, you got to have short-term memory. I feel like so many times I've seen Malik Willis get so, paralyzed, to use Mike Vrabel's word, and he gets to the point where he just kind of panics, that if the first read isn't there, he doesn't have the experience to say, okay, let me sit back, go to my next read. Let me just continue to go through my progressions, where Josh Dobbs does have kind of that veteran mentality of, it's cool, I'll sit back, I'll go through my progressions, I'm not going to panic if the first look isn't there, where I think we've seen Malik do that. So to the whole theme of not beating yourself up over not being perfect, Josh Dobbs has that expertise to be able to have short-term memory and shake off any mistakes he might make.
Yeah, he does, and that's why he looks a lot better under this circumstance than Malik Willis does. Why? Because he's been in the NFL long enough, and he's seen enough, and he's seen guys in big moments. He's watched Ben Roethlisberger in big moments and then come back to the sideline and talk to Todd Haley or whoever the offensive coordinator is. So he's remembering all these things. He wasn't actually in the game, mm-hmm. but he did experience it in a sense. Like, I watched it. I understand it. I heard the conversations between the OC and the quarterback. I know what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. I'm taking all of this in. So when my opportunity comes, this is how I will conduct myself like a starting quarterback. I think even Mike Vrabel alluded to that. Act like a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Act like a starting quarterback. And that's what Joshua Dobbs is doing, acting like a starting quarterback, being a starting quarterback. I said weeks ago on offense, and this is what Vrabel wants his guys to do, because you can't play a perfect game, but what you can do is your job. And your job allows you the ability to potentially be perfect as a team. If you're doing your job, Caroline, I'm doing my job, and Willie's doing his job, then the chances of that play working and it being perfect,
well-oiled machine,
it goes up tremendously. Not to say, now, it may not work because maybe the guy you're blocking, Caroline, is bigger than you, and maybe he gets a push. So, but it wasn't because you didn't operate within your technique. He just, on that particular play, he just beat you.
You're outmatched.
Exactly. You're outmatched on that particular play. But it wasn't because we tried to do something that we weren't accustomed to doing. Vrabel is trying to get his guys, especially in this situation, everybody just do their job. If you do your job, the play or the game will likely work out the way we want it to. If it doesn't, it's because they just flat out beat us. Not that we beat ourselves. They beat us because we did our job.
Let's get to your thoughts quickly on this. We'll go to the phones. Phone lines driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Nate's up next. What's up, Nate?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. So, Derek, since you were in the league, I want your opinion on this, because when I was listening to the Vrabel presser, I was listening to these few questions about DeMar, how do you feel about the coaches around the league not, you know, on the team as DeMar is, being asked questions about, you know, what the team's feeling and thinking and everything on this?
I mean, thank you. You're going to get questions.
Every coach will get
every coach will get this question.
Mike Tomlin had a statement on it earlier today, too.
You know, it's just the nature of you know, the circumstance. You know, I'm watching television and they're bringing on experts, you know, or cardiologists and everything else to talk about this particular incident. And, you know, they're going to talk to head coaches about this because this is a fraternity. You know, he may not be on your team, but you may have scouted him, you know, so you got to know the players somewhat.
And he mentioned today some of his players.
Exactly.
Knew him.
Being from Pittsburgh.
So, you know, you're going to get questions, you know, that are asked in this situation, and you just got to try to answer them the best way you know how, but not try to get outside of, you know, or in depth. Or talk about something you have no knowledge of.
And I think he has a very good feel for that.
Exactly.
I thought Mike Vrabel handled that part of it very, very well. Mm-hmm. I liked how he discussed with his team. He wanted an open discussion. They got the guys together. They aired it out. He knows it's on their mind.
Exactly.
Right? It helped to talk through it. And he said, we're not going to close those discussions if we feel like we need to do that. I thought he handled that very, very well. And just conveying that to the media. The other thing that really jumped out, he said, and you and I looked at each other when he said it, he said, when you're watching your son or daughter play, it's such a different way of watching a game than a regular fan. If you're just watching your team play, per se, you're focused on your son or daughter. And then when something happens like that, you can only just imagine what it's like for his family members to go through what they go through. So I thought that was just great perspective.
I thought
great
he handled it very well.
Yeah.
A very difficult situation that
he just
handled
made it human.
Well.
He made it about human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this is an update from the Buffalo Bills official Twitter account 5 minutes ago. It says DeMar Hamlin spent last night in the intensive care unit and remains there today in critical condition at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. We're grateful and thankful for the outpouring of support we have received thus far. So DeMar Hamlin still remains in the ICU in critical condition. Last update from the Buffalo Bills. Coming up next, we'll get NFL ESPN analyst Tim Hasselbeck's thoughts on this, on the Titans' upcoming matchup up against the Jags. All that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And joining us now is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. Tim Hasselbeck brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, the liquor store redefined. Now, Tim, we just got an update from the Buffalo Bills that DeMar Hamlin spent the night in the ICU and now currently remains in critical condition. Just your initial thoughts of what you saw last night of DeMar Hamlin and the subsequent outpouring of prayers and thoughts from fans and coaches and players around the league.
Well, my reaction was probably similar to everyone else who was watching, in that it was scary. I had never seen anything like that on a football field. And I think ultimately, you know, after the game was suspended and now seems like it was just canceled, seemed to be the right thing for, you know, everybody else that was, you know, there witnessing what happened. And, you know, I would just kind of join everybody else and, you know, praying for his full recovery and his health and, you know, his family as well, because I'm just sure that, you know, as chilling as it was for us to see it, it had to be frightening, you know, for his family to see him going through that on the football field.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. It was also released by the NFL that the Bills-Bengals game will not be made up this week, but they have not decided an official date of when that game will be made up, if that game will be made up. Of course, we want to keep our thoughts and our prayers with DeMar Hamlin and his family, but looking ahead to the rest of the NFL season and how the subsequent making up of this game, how it affects the playoffs, how do you see this affecting the playoffs, and when can this game be made up?
Yeah, my guess is that they just come to some type of I don't know what the word would be, agreement, or figure out how they consider that contest, right? Like, is it a tie? Is it a forfeit? My guess is if it's not been scheduled to be replayed this week, which I think is the right move, there isn't time to schedule the game. Now, mm-hmm. Both the Bills and the Bengals were part of that contest, but also, because of records, the Chiefs are, the Chiefs are impacted by this. I guess as are, other teams as well. And so my guess would be that, the NFL, probably the competition committee, maybe the owners, they just decide how to count, the Monday night game that was canceled between the Bills and the Bengals. Once they do that, I think that we'll play week 18 and see how things get seeded. But like, I don't know if anyone is going to have a problem with how that's done. I would hope that most people are understanding of just the circumstances being, something that's completely unforeseen and obviously, has put a lot of these players in kind of a really tough position in terms of just even being willing or mentally prepared to go play a football game. By canceling the game and then by probably just counting it a certain way and moving on to week 18, I think that's probably the best thing for certainly the players and the Bills and the Bengals.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Now, Tim, unfortunately, in the midst of all of this, when we should have been, solely concentrated on the good work of the EMTs and everyone involved mm-hmm. at trying to get to Hamlin as quickly as possible and trying to resuscitate him as quickly as possible and then moving on from the hospital, there were a lot of people upset at the NFL. I don't understand mm-hmm. why, in a sense, they're upset with the NFL. This is unprecedented. It's never happened. As players, when things happen on the field, our thought is, okay, the doctors have it. Yes, there are things going on, but the medical staff is there. They're handling it. There's not more we can do but pray and hope that everything works out. But then our next thing is, okay, let's just warm, regardless of what anybody else says, we warm up, we get going. And then mm-hmm. it's up to the coaches, the NFLPA, to try to sort of make that decision sure. on whether we play or not. But it seems like everybody was mad at the NFL, and I'm trying to figure out, why are you mad? I think they did exactly what they were supposed to do. It may not have happened, instantly right then and there when Hamlin fell to the ground, but I think subsequently after that, the NFL did the right thing, along with the coaches.
Yeah, D-Mace, I do think that people need to understand, we're watching it, it's not as, I would guess, and I'm certainly not an expert on this, but I would guess that if you were going to, suspend an NFL game or eventually cancel an NFL game, that there are protocols in place so that, those decisions can be made, as quickly as they need to be made. Now, I think we all would agree when there are so many different layers and partners and people involved in something the magnitude of an NFL game, much less, Monday Night Football, which, I think is a bigger production than, a 1 o'clock Eastern game, on another network. Like, it's not as simple as, canceling, a middle school, high school football game. Like, one person can't just walk out in the middle of the field and be like, yeah, we're canceling the game, we're moving on. Like, so I do think that, there probably is a process that does take a little bit of time. So I do think you're right in the sense of people are saying, hey, why don't you just go ahead and cancel this game? I mean, truth be told, people that were saying cancel that game, they certainly didn't have all the information at that time either. Now, they maybe end up being right, but it didn't mean that they had all the necessary information. Now, one thing I will say is, and I believe Troy Vincent addressed this today, Joe Buck said on the broadcast that the you know, the players were told and, you know, the teams were told, you know, you have 5 minutes to warm up.
Tim, before you go to that, when that was brought up, I'm like, the NFL didn't put out a presser or anything saying get ready in 5 minutes. So where did they get all that from?
Yeah, well, the only thing, D-Mace, I would say is this, you know, having called, you know, college games, you know, whether there's a player on the field or whether there's, like we've been in lightning delays. And is it, if you're broadcasting a game and there's some type of delay to the game, you're waiting to hear. You know, typically your truck will hear from somebody, an official of some sort, to say, okay, hey, we are, like, this is what our plan is going forward. So, like, I don't believe that Joe Buck would say, hey, they've been given 5 minutes without somebody having relayed the truck that information. Like, he's too much of a professional to say something like that without them being told that information. So, now, I do think, like, they were told that, and then Zach Taylor went over to Sean McDermott, walked across the field, and, you know, I think at that point, I think they both, I mean, you could see it on the players' faces, I think at that point, I think the leadership of the team said, look, we need a second here, you know, like, and then Sean McDermott took his team to the locker room. And so, listen, however it went down, I do think the leadership of Sean McDermott and Zach Taylor showed itself. You know, eventually I think the league's leadership came through. I'm not mad at the league. I don't think the league made a mistake. I think ultimately the proper thing happened. You know, I also think that, you know, if Joe Buck was, you know, said on air that the game was going to be restarted in 5 minutes, you know, that wasn't just a random thought in his head.
Again, ESPN analyst Tim Hasselbeck is with us. I thought ESPN as a network handled that situation as best as you possibly could, handling it with grace, handling it with compassion and empathy for Damar Hamlin and the entire Buffalo Bills organization, Damar Hamlin's family. But looking at what the NFL does and where they go from here, how this will be addressed, because I know you look at concussions and the NFL has taken that so, so, so seriously. And with an unprecedented and terrifying situation that we saw last night with Damar Hamlin, how does the NFL address this, and where do they go from here?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting, you know, situation for them in that this was unprecedented, and so because of that, you know, there maybe have been protocols in place. Listen, I mean, I think it's one of the reasons why, you know, as we sit here today, you know, the medical professionals and the people that first responded to, you know, Hamlin's care, you know, 20 years ago, you know, the stadium probably would not be, you know, as resourced with those, you know, professionals as they are today. And I think that, you know, you hopefully learn from these situations and you know, are ready, better prepared in the event that a tragedy of some sort, you know, or, you know, a situation that needs to be tended to the way it was last night is handled in the best possible way, and that the things that are most important, which I think we all would agree is, you know, everyone's safety and health, you know, would be more important than, you know, a game, you know, the competition of a game or how it affects, you know, playoff seedings or records or anything of that nature. So that's what I would say in regards to that. And then, you know, there's been so much speculation about, you know, the cause of the cardiac arrest. And, you know, I know that there have been issues in other sports. You know, Chris Pronger, you know, a former hockey player, talked about the situation that he was involved in. He was hit with a puck. There was a high school lacrosse player a couple years ago that was hit with a lacrosse ball in the chest. And, you know, there have been some issues in the sport of baseball as well. And, you know, I think that, you know, as you talk about concussion and advancement in terms of equipment to keep players safe, you know, maybe this leads to something, even though, you know, we don't know if this actually would happen. But if it is a similar event to those, we could see, you know, a change in the equipment, the shoulder pads and how players' chests are protected, you know, with that equipment.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. We appreciate your insight in the situation. And, of course, we continue to send thoughts and prayers to DeMar Hamlin and his family. And coming up next, we will get into the Titans-Jags matchup. We'll get into Tim Hasselbeck's thoughts on that. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim Hasselbeck brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, the liquor store redefined. We've got an AFC South championship game this weekend. The Titans going on the road to Jacksonville for the AFC South and for the team's chances to make the playoffs. Tim, it was officially announced yesterday that Josh Dobbs will be the starter for the Titans. I think that's the right move. I think that he kind of brought a sense of energy to this team against the Cowboys that we hadn't seen all season long. Your thoughts on Josh Dobbs being named the starter for the Titans this weekend?
Yeah, I guess, you know, not a surprise based on last week. I just think his experience as a passer, his understanding of the passing game, I think probably comfort in the passing game, almost just made it so that that had to be the decision. And I think it's a tough task to be in his shoes in terms of, you know, I mean, you know, only being with the team for a few weeks, but you know, with the current situation, how the roster was constructed with a developmental quarterback, I think it probably does give the Titans, you know, their best chance to win.
How do the Titans win this weekend?
That's a great question. Look, I think, you know, the formula definitely is run the football, play really good defense, don't turn the football over. And, look, I think that's, you know, it's kind of generic and it's, you know, probably been the plan for the Titans for a while. It's just been easier said than done. And then I think this, look, the job that Doug Peterson has done, you know, with that football team, I think is, you know, commendable. And I think Trevor Lawrence's development has been real. So I think there's part of it, too, where, you know, in terms of defending Trevor, I think it's different than defending him last year. I think that you have to find ways to confuse him. I think it was easily done in the past. I don't think it's easier or as easily done now. And so I think that that's, you know, part of what you need to try to do with him. And he's done a good job of seeing things.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us from ESPN. Tim, I can remember our conversations throughout the season. I would periodically ask you about Jacksonville's progress. I kept thinking, they could be on the verge here. When they went to L.A. and whipped the Chargers in week three, it was the same day that the Titans got on the board and beat the Raiders. I was thinking, maybe it's coming together. Then they had the skid where they couldn't find a way to win a lot of close games where they might have been on paper the better team. So where do you see them now? Like, they look very confident right now. It does look like it's coming together.
Yeah, they're confident. It is coming together. I think the quarterback has started to elevate everybody else's play. And I probably said to you back then as well, look, Travis Etienne, like, he, you know how you watch a game and there are some players and you're like, you know, I know all these guys are fast, but man, he looks fast among a bunch of fast guys. Like, that's how Travis Etienne looks. Much like I think people felt that way about Tony Pollard when they'd see him come in the game after Zeke Elliott and they'd be like, you know what, he's got another gear. I think that, look, that's Travis Etienne. And so he has helped quite a bit, you know, with their offense, just his explosiveness in the run game, in the screen game. And so I think with that, and then I think Trevor has elevated his play in a way that I think he's made the receivers better. I think they're a really dangerous football team because the quarterback, if you just go back to how people thought of him when he was being evaluated out of college, kind of one of these guys that, like, I think people felt like he could play at a level, an MVP-type level at some point in his career. I think he's trending in that direction. So, you know, when you have that type of play out of that position, I think it matters. And then defensively, you know, they've continued to be a competitive group with guys playing hard. And, you know, I think the Dallas game is probably the best example of, you know, why that matters for their team.
Tim, there was a great line of questioning, I thought, with Mike Vrabel. He has been stressing that when you're the underdog and when you're undermanned a little bit, like they will be in Jacksonville, you don't have the margin for error. You can't make mistakes.
Yep.
But the balance of pounding that into your team, the team knows it, but not losing the confidence. You know what I mean? Like, there's, you've probably played for a lot of different coaches. Some guys just hammered away, Bobby Knight style, right? If you turn it over here, we're running. We're going on the end line. We're running 50 yards up and back until we get it right. You know, and then there's other coaches that it's a little more positive reinforcement. Finding that balance will be really important, I think.
Willie, I agree with you. I definitely was not at my best when it was, you know, basically like, hey, don't make a mistake. You know, like that to me, like I felt that to be somewhat paralyzing as a player. And, you know, so there is that balance of like, look, we need to be smart. You know, at the same time, like we, especially if you're an offensive player, like we can't lose our aggressiveness and can't lose the fact that like we should be dictating whatever, you know, what the defense is doing, not just reacting to them. So yeah, look, I remember playing for a coach and it was like, hey, look, let's just get it into the fourth quarter and have it be a game. Let's just get it into the fourth quarter. Like those types of environments, I think, look, there are coaches, I mean, you bring up Bobby Knight, like I'm sure there are coaches that have had a lot of success doing that. But I think that you can, you know, I think, I don't know what the word is, like scare your team in a sense to not be able to just, you know, play with conviction and be sure. And my guess is, you know, Vrabel, just seeing his interaction with players, that he doesn't want anybody to play scared. And, you know, his experience as a player and people he's been around, you know, I think that, you know, he'll do a good job of trying to strike that balance where guys can play with confidence.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Appreciate you for joining us. We'll chat with you next week.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
Yep. All right, thanks. Tim Hasselbeck joining us on Caroline, Willie, and D-Maze, as he does every Tuesday. He mentions this Jags team, says he thinks they're a dangerous team, and it's because of one player specifically. Do we buy it? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Maze, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.